Hello everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 42 of the Art Scene Podcast. Today's guest is Blue Cease, the executive director of the Rochester Contemporary Arts Center in Rochester, New York. For this special episode of the podcast, you'll get to hear Blue talk about his early beginnings as an art installer slash registrar that allowed him to work with various artists, as well as the George Eastman Museum, where he also was a guest teacher and curator. But the main focus of this episode will be Current Scene, a biennial led by Blue that is dedicated to supporting Rochester's small and mid-sized art venues and bringing new curatorial views and artists in the region's growing contemporary art community. The show opens October 4th and will run till November 17th. Now here's my conversation with Blue, where we hear him talk about all the cool programming that Current Scene has to offer this year. Before I start, and we're going to talk about Current Scene, which is the biennial that the Rochester Contemporary hosts, and it's the big thing that you also direct as well. But I wanted to get to know you a little bit, and if you can kind of, you know, usually I start with my guests by asking where they're from, or a little bit more of their background. So let's start with if are you originally from the Rochester, New York area?
Yeah, in the region here. Yeah, but I'd love to step back and just thank you for having me on. It's a pleasure. Finally had a chance to listen to a couple episodes. Very cool that the project we're going to talk about is called Current Scene, and it relates to the name of the podcast. So very, very great, and really appreciate you having us on.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So just back to your question, I grew up in the Finger Lakes area here near Rochester, and then I went to undergrad in Asheville, North Carolina, and went to a little hippie college called Warren Wilson. And I suppose most relevant to our conversation here, toward the end of undergrad, maybe halfway through undergrad, I got more involved with the little college gallery and started working with artists, helping them install their artwork. Had a number of kind of established artists in the Asheville area that I started to help with their exhibitions, both the physical aspects of it, but also quickly got interested in and had some success helping them arrange and design and lay out sequencing photographic exhibitions and things like that. So I kind of got into the support registrarial art handling role right away while I was still in undergrad, and then that kind of continued after I was between undergrad and grad school, and then all the way through grad school as well, working in a couple other museums and doing some other freelance work, working for individual artists who had some traveling shows, and also working at the George Eastman Museum here in Rochester in an art handling role, and then working through that, some guest curating, some co-curating, and some teaching while I was in grad school.
And then, you know, growing up, did you always kind of was the goal always being interested in working at a museum or being in curating, or was that something that you kind of along the way discovered, like going through school and doing all these different experiences that you just described?
It was not the goal. And I would say, I probably have a somewhat alternative path here through undergrad, in high school to some degree, but definitely through undergrad, I was certainly more interested in making and exploring, in documenting. I think, my first sort of inkling of an interest in an art career would have been more along the path of photojournalism or documentary photography. I was very interested in the kind of, Magnum school of photographic journalism and documentary work and hotspots around the world and documenting very important issues around the world. So I kind of initially, I would say for the first couple of years in undergrad and then beyond, I was kind of picturing myself on a path like that. Yeah. And that led me to grad school back here in Rochester at the Visual Studies Workshop. And but quickly, while I was in grad school, well, I did some independent photographic work in Haiti and in China. between undergrad and grad school. So then, you know, fast forward to grad school, I kind of still thought I was on a independent practitioner, art making, reportage path. But in grad school, I quickly became much more interested in bringing communities together and putting on events and helping other artists. And that was much more exciting to me, frankly, than just realizing my own vision. It felt very natural and very much like a smooth transition to the curatorial role, helping other artists realize their vision for a certain project. And also, I'm always very excited, and I think it comes for me, curating, some part of curating comes from the same place as art making, a creative place of bringing artists together, bringing their works together toward, you know, greater collective impact, and in concert with one another, especially to address certain issues or provide different context to issues. So that was kind of a natural transition for me through grad school.
And then what exactly brought you to Rochester, New York? Like, what was the interest to like be in that specific area to like continue onto this career path? Was it the community itself, or was it just like just the opportunity was available there?
You know, I was planning to move to Portland, Oregon. And then I came back to visit some family here in the region, and just sort of got pulled into the community here, started working at the George Eastman Museum. And it really felt to me like at that time, Rochester had some very critical issues, some real challenges as a community. It's an incredibly divided city. It has a very interesting history and somewhat complex history, but yet it's still a very small city. So I guess for me, it felt both comfortable, but also challenging. And it seemed like I could be a part of growing and evolving the art community here. In a way that in a major metro, you know, might take 10 years to really get your grounding here, I think. And in maybe not all smaller cities, but definitely in Rochester, there's kind of a whole constellation of challenges and complex issues that the city was and to some degree still is grappling with. And that just felt very exciting.
What kind of issues or topics are they dealing with? Because I, you know, I'm from California, so I'm a little bit unfamiliar with like a little bit. To share a little bit with us the a little bit the history between the city and the art community that's there.
Yeah. For example, in 1964, really the first documented uprisings, as some people will call race riots, happened in Rochester. And still today, there are some areas of Rochester that have some of the most concentrated poverty in the country. But it's also in some ways a very wealthy and affluent community. There's an interesting corporate history here of Kodak and Xerox and Bausch & Lomb. It's quite a diverse community as well. But yet it's also starkly divided on some, you know, very expected and unfortunate lines. There's a lot of work to do around equity in Rochester. There's also a very interesting history of social justice. Of course, Susan B. Anthony, Frederick Douglass, you know, going way back. But there's a long, long history of activism here in Rochester. I could go on and on, but that's my quick summary of that.
So then when you started at the Rochester Contemporary, what was one of your main goals of like what you wanted to take, what the direction you wanted to take the institution?
First and foremost, you know, this is this organization had, you know, at that time, roughly a 30-year history and was squarely situated in the artist space movement, founded in 1977, along with a whole range of other organizations, small art centers. Many grew out of a cooperative kind of hippie context, and some survived the 80s, some survived the 90s, even fewer survived the economic downturn of, you know, 08, 09. So we're sort of part of a constellation of non-collecting arts organizations that have that, you know, at this point, 40 plus year history. Many of those organizations merged with or somehow connected to universities or other museums. And we stayed independent and a solo standalone nonprofit all those years. So that being said, there were really somewhat typical small nonprofit challenges, major financial challenges, and just, you know, general updates and stability and permanency that really needed to be dealt with. And so jumping right into the institutional structure and stabilizing the organization was task number one. Certainly, as I mentioned, my interest in and my commitment to activism and social justice, I really wanted to make sure that our organization was showing artists on a regular basis who were addressing issues in their work. They were making work and engaging with communities both locally, but also plugging Rochester into a national context. I also found that to be a very interesting and perhaps insurmountable challenge. To both be relevant locally and nationally and be quite a small organization. So all that to say, it's been a ton of work. I've been here at the organization for about 12 years now almost. And, you know, we're doing great. Certainly we've achieved a level of stability and permanency that many of the small cultural organizations have not. And to some degree, we have established a few traditions and established some degree of reputation nationally for hopefully for striking that right balance of being engaged with the local community, but also bringing some, you know, major national and occasionally international artists to Rochester to infuse the local community with new ideas. So all that to say, we're doing great. I love it. It's been a ton of work.
All right, so let's talk about the main topic, which is current scene. And so, you know, one of the questions I had, we've talked previously over the phone before, I don't think I asked this, which was if the current scene, is this the first year in its current title that it's being held? Because I know there's a history that the biennial has always existed. But was it always called Current Scene, or did it have a different name, or did it exist in a different form before the one that's coming up in October?
Yeah, thank you. First, maybe I should step back a little bit and say that for a number of years, the larger museum in Rochester here organized what they called the Rochester Biennial, and that was a single organization exhibition. And they, you know, they did a terrific job with that. But under new leadership, they decided to do away with that. And, you know, we simply asked if they could pass that brand on to us. And they did. It was a wonderful, generous move, I think, and a good sense of community building, sort of passing the torch, as it were. I think, you know, there are many different models for biennials out there. But you know, our vision for this right from the beginning was to distribute the brand around the city and truly build a multi-venue project, not have it only in our building here. And so we sat on it and planned for a year or so. Then in 2017, we partnered with two other smaller contemporary art organizations and kind of put our toe in the water of this collaborative multi-venue program. And, you know, that really got us started thinking about this and working together. And now, looking at 2019, in 2 weeks, we'll launch about 24 different projects at 16 different locations. Some of those locations are about our scale, our size. They're 24/7, 365 actual brick and mortar venues. They have an ongoing program all year round, and a few others are simply pop-ups where we're taking over a storefront, an underutilized space, and installing works there. And a few other projects are public art that will be installed along this East Avenue Main Street thread that transects the city. So we felt like it was really important to stick with our core constituency and our group of partners on this. I think it would be very easy for this biennial to encompass all of the larger museums. There are a couple other larger museums in the area here, but we're really dedicated to collaborating with and uniting the small venues here in the community. It's a very vibrant strata, I would say, within the art community here in Rochester. And this project, we really want to make sure that it helps to shine a light on all of that activity at the small community organizations, even when they're bringing national artists into Rochester. So that's a core aspect of what we're trying to achieve with Current Scene. And back to your naming issue, in 2017, we did not call it Current Scene. This is the first year we have sort of, you know, done this focused branding.
You know, it's interesting, like you talked about how, you know, the previous institution wasn't going to do it anymore. Explain that process a little bit of like, was how easy or difficult it was to just like ask, oh, can we just kind of just take this brand and like move it over here? You know, like how, like what was that process like? It's like that, I mean, for something that went on for a while and then to say, I'm not going to do it anymore, but you can just take it, you know, like yeah. How did that work out?
I honestly don't remember how the first conversation began, but the as I mentioned, there's a change in leadership at that museum, and the former director was relatively close with our organization as well, because he was in his post for many years, we collaborated over the years between our two organizations. So we knew him well. And of course, we were in the process of getting to know the new director. And I don't remember exactly how the conversation started, but it was pretty simple. It was a familial kind of transaction. And then, you know, we just put out a joint press release saying, hey, you know, we're working together to pass the torch and expand this project. So that it has a fresh life. And I think it ultimately was a good move for them, because it didn't really fit with the vision that they were working on. And now we're able to build it into more of a citywide project. And, you know, they do a number of other community-based projects and, you know, major group and or solo exhibitions. So I don't think after two more years, no one will sort of even miss that at their venue, and it will be such a different project. It's a whole new, so it really wasn't, it was very, very easy to do. It's really about creating over 4 years, essentially just creating a whole new brand with a very small bit of continuity.
Yeah, it seems like the collaborative aspect that you've created in this form, I guess that I'm assuming that didn't kind of exist in its previous form.
Its previous form, it was only at the one museum. Wow. It was not multiple venues. It was really a solo venue museum show of regional artists.
So like one of the things about you were talking about partnering up with different venues was I read about how you identify there's core venues and there's framework venues. And can you tell me, is that something you came up with, or like when coming up with this version of Current Scene? Can you explain that a little bit? Because I think the framework venues are smaller, but it seems like the smaller venues, and then the core seems to be the bigger venues in the area.
Yeah. And that'll lead me to mention a bit of the geography as well. Rochester is laid out with a main street that runs east-west. And in some ways, that street divides the city. In other ways, it connects the city. And so if you're looking at a map, there are these three small venues, and I'm including us in that list, that are very active in the local community. We're one of them is affiliated with the RIT, the university in the area. Another is a graduate program that has a very active publishing program and galleries, and also affiliated with another university. So we're talking about Visual Studies Workshop and the RIT City Space, and then Rochester Contemporary Art Center sort of in the middle of them. But we're all located on the same thread. So it made sense to not only work together, but also connect between us, and working on this concept of thinking of Main Street and our the street that we're on as not only a dividing line in our city, but a connective thread. We really wanted to expand into other neighborhoods by just continuing that thread down Main Street. So we were able to fill in the framework, so to speak, with a number of other pop-ups and also existing brick and mortar spaces on the west side of Rochester. So our, you know, our vision here is really to shift the focus by bringing new curatorial visions, new artists to our neighborhood, which is kind of a sanctified arts neighborhood already. And it's also about moving visitors to other neighborhoods. And encouraging you know, the regular arts patrons who might be coming from the suburbs to not only land in our neighborhood, but to go west and explore different neighborhoods along this connective thread of venues, which are literally creating a framework across Main Street.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because it's like, you know, we're talking about an art biennial, but I mean, the way you are laying out the venues and along this main street and this thread, that you kind of are also allowing the people who live in the area to explore other areas that they wouldn't normally go to, probably, even if it's just, but like what's bringing them all to do this is to see art and to see like all the different shows and the programming that involved, you know, instead of going to their regular place all the time, they like, oh, let's go over here because there's just this programming I want to go see. And it's another, this down the street a little bit more, down this different neighborhood that we don't normally go to. And it feels like the long-term effect of this is that you're bringing everybody together and not like just, you know, only staying in their little part of town. And it seems that that's the ultimate effect of all of this.
We hope so, for sure. There's two other influences I want to mention. You know, in 2007, we started organizing a gallery night here in Rochester. And it's, you know, it's called First Friday. It's not rocket science. Many, many cities have gallery nights of one form or another. So we organized that for the whole city. Similarly, it's committed to the small venues. The museums are not a part of that gallery night. And that's very intentional. That's about making sure there's enough light to shine on the small venues that, you know, if they can attract another 20 or 30 people on an opening reception night, that's a big deal. Those 20 or 30 visitors to a large museum are not as consequential, not as significant. So if we can keep our small venues, even when we might be one of the, I would say, the biggest of the small venues in town, if we can keep us all collaborating on a monthly basis during this First Friday drumbeat every month, there's some kind of events at, say, a shifting group of maybe 10 to 30 small venues throughout the city, then now we can build on top of that, which has been, you know, running well in Rochester. This First Friday Gallery Night program has been running well since 2007. We can build on that and really connect the venues more fully, and everyone's investing in their programs, putting on, you know, some of their most ambitious exhibitions, really focusing on new curatorial efforts for this 6-week period. It's sort of logical that we're able to build on the First Friday model. And the focus on geography and a street is really influenced and informed by the Fourth Berlin Biennial, which was really structured around the Augustrasse in Berlin. Very important and historic and complicated street. And a number of venues for the Berlin Biennial were all located along this strip. In some cases, the installations were placed inside people's homes, apartments, and existing contemporary art spaces. So really saw that as an inspiration for our focus on Main Street here.
It's cool, too, that you're kind of also establishing, which I think is something in bigger cities, like especially here in Bay Area, like needs a little bit of work to do. But you're creating this relationship with these smaller venues and in the somewhat bigger venues, and they're not like they're not relying on each other, but they're kind of supporting each other in different ways, and in each way it kind of creates this network and family kind of feel. Where it's like, you know, I'll help you out, and in the end, it's going to help me out, and vice versa. And in the end, it's all a huge success. Like, everybody wins. Like, you know, like, nobody, there isn't like, oh, I don't, you know, I'm just trying to get my visitors to come to my place. I don't really care about what you do. You know, everything kind of benefits everybody, is what it seems like.
Yeah. And I might, you know, in an hour long conversation, I might make it sound a lot easier than it has been to convince everyone to see it that way. But ultimately it has worked, and with exactly those goals in mind, like you say, they're limited arts patrons in a small city. It's that simple. We're all working to build that roster of visitors, and when the small venues can all work together to share lists and co-promote, we can hopefully attract new visitors to all of the places. And when the museums can exert, the larger museums who have, you know, university support and their budgets are X, what smaller organizations' budgets are, when they can exert a little bit of, you know, generosity and restraint and say shift away from this one night, allowing all the small venues to dine on First Friday, the small venues are able to then promote the museums on those other nights throughout the month. So I think that's, you get the vision. Yeah.
So like, what's really awesome about this is that you guys are doing this with what you said, like a limited number of arts patrons, right? Like in San Francisco, I would assume way more art patrons in the Bay Area than just the Rochester, New York area. And bigger institutions are still struggling to even figure out how they partner with the smaller ones in the city. And the fact that you're able to do it with like a limited arts patron to in my opinion, more successful than over here, because I got to tell you, in the Bay Area, it's a problem where we have these bigger name places, but one of the complaints always is that they don't ever really partner or reach out to all the smaller places. They kind of live in silos a little bit in this big city. So I think that's awesome that in a place like Rochester, New York, that there is an attempt to do this. As a community, you see the value of it, and you're doing it with like a less smaller like art patron community than like a big city like San Francisco or even New York has, which is really cool.
Yeah, for sure, and it's you know, it's a ton of work, and it's a lot of meetings and a lot of conversations, and it's a long game. Frankly, it's really a long-term issue and a long-term attempt to help everybody succeed. Just for a little more context, the city of Rochester proper downtown has about, I'll just give you the number for the whole surrounding area, 1 million people in the greater Rochester metro area. So that's all of the suburbs stretching all the way around Rochester. Downtown, I believe, is only about 80,000 people. So it's quite a small city.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk a little bit more about the programming. I kind of like, you know, give me a few highlights of something that to look forward to during the biennial.
Yeah, thank you. So one key structure here, and it's both aspirational, but it's also logistical. The whole biennial is built on the curatorial effort. So each project has its own curator, and we really want to drive the conversation in Rochester amongst the art community to think and value and consider and celebrate the role of the curator in these small spaces, the curatorial effort and the arts administration effort that is taking place in these small spaces and community arts organizations all year round. It's happening there, and our city is rich with these programs, but this is really an effort to shine a light on that and celebrate and acknowledge that this is a very important kind of specialized field. I don't want to get into the rarefication of the curatorial act, but it's really about showing the community that curating an exhibition is, frankly, more complex than curating one's Instagram feed, right? We use this term very often today in our culture, for better or worse. I mean, that's a whole other topic. Maybe you should have a podcast just on that. But in our community, we feel at ROCO, and certainly many of our collaborators feel the same way. We really need to celebrate and acknowledge the act of curating, the profession, that it is a profession. It's not a hobby. You know, conveying this to our visitorship is critical to us growing the art community. Simultaneously, we're also really looking for this biennial collaborative program to nudge Rochester to think differently and raise the bar for art writing in the region. There's really an incredible lack of, first of all, outlets. There's one, corporate daily newspaper, and there's one free weekly kind of alternative news weekly. And, you know, each of those outlets, you know, may have one art story, two art stories, three art stories per week. And it's just not enough, frankly. It becomes a bit of a ceiling that holds back a visual arts community like this, which really has a lot happening. A lot of young people are graduating and staying here or coming back to Rochester. And there really is a rich visual arts history here. So we see those two elements, raising awareness about the importance and the career of curating, and also celebrating and acknowledging, encouraging more people to think of art writing as a possible career, and broadening the voices who in the region are writing about the visual arts. Both of those elements, they need to happen for us to continue to grow as an art community. So those are sort of sub-agendas, frankly, and the curatorial effort has led us to work with and build this whole biennial around the curator's vision and their interpretation of the overarching theme, our current moment, our changing city. So many ways in which the different curators have interpreted that. There are a number of solo artist projects, a couple video projections inside windows, a few public sculptures will be installed along the thread transecting the city. And also a number of group exhibitions like ours here at ROCO, at Visual Studies Workshop, and others.
Is there something in particular that you are going to be working on that's like kind of like your baby during this biennial?
Yeah, so I've curated a couple projects as part of this, one being an exhibition called State of the City. And this is the continuation of an occasional series of exhibitions here at ROCO. And this time, the project will include five artists/collaboratives, and they're all engaging with different aspects of our city, and they're all attempting to bridge different communities and raise awareness and build a more cohesive, connected city through their work and through their practice. So the exhibition includes a photographic documentary project about a community that engages with the river running through Rochester in a very interesting and counterintuitive way. Another project is called the Artist Sustainability Survey, which is a whole range of artists who are interviewing each other about their careers and their path. Another artist has done an expanded series of drawings, portraits of the homeless community. He is an artist who is deeply involved with the faith community here in Rochester and has been working with the homeless for 20 plus years. So very simple, very austere, straightforward portraits of people who are his friends first and foremost. But he's in a very very respectful and understanding way. He's honoring these people who can easily be considered other because of their homeless status.
And how long will the biennial last?
Biennial will run for 6 weeks. And scheduling and some of the logistics surrounding this, I'll just go into those. I think that might be interesting for some of your listeners. We chose to approach this quite modestly. Of course, at our place, we're used to running our gallery hours 5 days a week for, 5 to 8 hours per day. We do this. We do it year round, along with a number of the other core venues who are a part of this program. However, there also are, pop-ups that are in, formerly unrented or unoccupied storefronts.
Wow.
And the curator of that project is really leading the effort. And so those projects will only be open 3 days per week. Standardizing those hours and settling on sort of the most hours per week with the most basic standardized schedule is one of the more complex parts of a project like this, honestly. And as of right now, this whole project has basically, very little budget. It really has no budget of its own. Rochester Contemporary Art Center is sort of subsidizing this first real proper biennial around the city by paying for the advertising, the marketing, the coordination, and a number of the other venues have their own budgets. But those budgets they vary widely. So, in a number of instances, some of those venues are still relying on volunteer gallery sitters to keep the pop-ups open. And we absolutely acknowledge that that's not a sustainable approach. We need to grow this into a project that where everyone involved can be paid and should be paid for their time. Sure. So, we'll certainly be working toward that for 2021.
But it says a lot that, the fact that you are able to get volunteers to keep it going, that, it's really, it's truly, a community-involved biennial because, people want to have it, right? So people are volunteering and people want to make sure that, that you don't have to shut down the pop-up part aspect of the biennial because you ran out of volunteers. Like, you are getting people to help and keep it going.
Yeah, we hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's interest, obviously, right? Obviously, you have the long-term goal to have paid volunteers, but the fact that is there, right? The interest is there to do it. 6 weeks, that's a long time. And I keep thinking the only point of reference I have to anything where something is in a town for 6 weeks and constantly has all this programming is like the county fair in San Diego that I grew up in, where that lasts 6 weeks and everybody you talk to is like, oh yeah, every day we're on a Tuesday night, we're going to the county fair. But the fact that this is like an art related event for 6 weeks that basically encompasses the town is really cool. Like I don't think I've usually biennials are like a 6 week long exhibit inside a building, but this is like you have pop ups going on, you have talks going on, and panel discussions and exhibitions through a 6 week period is really cool.
Yeah, no, we're thrilled. We're really excited. The response has been terrific. And we're really hoping that, we'll be helping to, shine a light on these new curatorial efforts. I mean, there are a few people who are curating their first proper project in public through this. And, in some of our write-up, we've promoted the fact that the curators are really spanning three generations, which I think is really cool.
And I would assume that this is really great for like the town itself, like the restaurants and the shops, because you have people being out and about more. So I'm assuming the city is probably like feeling great and happy about that this is going to happen for like 6 weeks.
Honestly, we are we're still, and that's part of the hurdle in this city. We are still working to get city government, county government, fully on board and behind this. This city fully supports festivals and has seen that more of a festival model is an economic driver, and us bringing people in and aligning the small venues around a contemporary art biennial is proving to be a bit harder for some of our leaders to wrap their minds around. And we may even be leading a bit of a field trip, hopefully bringing some people to some other regional contemporary art biennials or triennials that are further along in their evolution. As you know, many cities have major successful contemporary art projects like this. You know, we're not inventing this model by any means. We are putting a unique spin on it, though, for sure, by focusing on the small venues. And inherently, I think that's going to create a level of sustainability and grassroots investment that we're really dedicated to.
Do you have an idea of what the apprehension would be? Like, is it just logistics wise, like the way it's set up in the town, or is it more like money wise? They don't think the investment is worth it, or is it all of those things sometimes that they think about?
You know, I won't guess on that really. I think that the visual arts in this city have not been front and center when it comes to art and culture. And we are squarely dedicated. This is not a multi-arts festival,
right?
This is really, we're really staying laser focused on largely younger artists, mm-hmm. artists who are addressing issues in the city, a real contemporary focus. And so, you know, if you think more broadly about a general arts event, say like Art Prize, you know, that started out with a major infusion of philanthropic investment that immediately brought validity to that project. But yet also Art Prize is not solely focused on, you know, thoughtful, conceptual, contemporary art. Art Prize was really a wide open project with many approaches to making and creativity. I think we're setting ourselves up for this challenge to some degree, mm-hmm. But I don't think it's insurmountable. Certainly, you know, our leaders are moving slowly on this as the visual art community here in Rochester is becoming more known. There's more of a sense that the city government and county government really need to invest in it and get behind it in the same way that they have supported the performing arts and other, you know, music, other arts over the last, you know, 30, 40 years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and what you just said is very in line with the theme that you have, which is the Our Current Moment, our Changing City theme, right? I mean, what other, you know, moment to like make some change is gathering to see what's been all the stuff that you all have been doing and planning for the last couple of years.
Agreed.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. And it was great to hear and learn a little bit more about not only like the biennial itself, but like the Rochester art community and the art scene there. And remind us again, when is Current Scene open?
Current Scene opens in 2 weeks, October 4th. Most of the projects run through November 16th, some through November 17th. And the website is currentscene.org, spelled S-E-E-N, but of course it's easy to find online.
Great. Well, thanks. Thanks for coming on, Blue. And hopefully, in the art scene, I'll get to visit Rochester sometime and check it all out.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
That's it, everyone. Thanks for listening. And thanks again to Blue for coming on. And thanks again to Claudia Predeline for helping set up the meeting. Just as a reminder, Current Scene will kick off October 4th and run till November 17th in Rochester, New York. For more info on specific programming and dates, visit www.currentscene.org. You can also follow what's happening throughout the biennial on their Instagram account, @currentscenerock. All right, till next time, everyone.